Hi everyone, and welcome to Keyframe, the Geek Show's dedicated animation podcast. We cover everything from anime to stop motion to even puppetry. Yes, that strange thing that doesn't seem like animation, but it actually is. My name's Rob, and joining me today are Tucky and Mark.
Hello.
Hello.
So, how are you guys this week?
I'm good. I'm in the middle of a lot of things at the moment. Well, considering Scotland Loves Animations is basically next week, or coming up this week, depending on when you're listening to it, I've attempted to catch up on Eureka 7, not Eureka 7, as the dub will tell us, and it's not going well at all.
Sorry,
I watched something else.
Thing is, I have to say, to everyone listening, when Mark told me how they were pronouncing Eureka in the American dub, and I have to emphasize, Eureka may be a statement that Archimedes made in ancient Greece, but it's actually in the English dictionary. And for Americans to actually get an English word wrong just kind of proves everything we've been saying about American dubs.
I just assumed because it's a Japanese property, I was just like, well, maybe they've just kind of gotten it wrong and it's purposely pronounced differently. But no. Well, it's just Americans.
The thing is, they don't have a problem with the Yuri part because they can say Yuri on Ice or Yuri Gagarin.
Yuri Gagarin.
First man in space. Although Yuri Gagarin on Ice would upset the Russians a lot.
Well, one of them's Russian anyway. It'll just make more sense, I suppose.
Just anthropomorphize the whole Russian space race. Have Sputnik as like his manager or something.
Oh, don't.
Anthropomorphize the space station.
Don't. Do you remember that old 1980s pop group, Zig Zig Sputnik?
No, I'm not. I am that old, but I'm not that old.
Am I showing my age now?
Well, I have no idea what you're about.
How to work out Rob's age? No, I'm not like a tree. You can't cut me in half and count the rings.
Just keep seeing various anime while moving back and seeing where he stops.
Kimba, the White Lion.
I was there for that.
And what?
1978. You were there for that.
Oh, that's my impression of Rob. He's not there for that.
All right, I was getting worried there. I was thinking, is Mark...
I was going to say, if you perfected time travel, Mark, you've got to let us in on it.
Either that or he's a lot older than he looks and he's just not told us.
Well, if I'd perfected time travel, I probably wouldn't be watching the thing. I did watch to review.
Yeah, what was that?
I'm fine. I genuinely don't even hate this series. This is a series I have long joked about, and it is quite quick. I watched it on the back of ReZero last year, originally, and I was just like, yeah, this is never going to work. But I liked it, so...
Well, you've talked about it a lot. I know exactly what you're talking about today, and you have talked about it a lot.
Oh, I love this series. I don't know why. I hate harems. I hate generic male protagonists, but
oh,
I do.
No. You're lying to us.
No, no. He might hate harems and he might hate generic male protagonists, but he loves monster girls.
That is correct. You gotta have a bit of monster girl. That sounds wrong. That's fine. That is completely fine. This is Monster Musume, so this is completely fine. We can go completely out there. We're scraping the bottom of the barrel first, and then we're going to pile stuff on top of it. And by the end of this review segment, we'll be coming out with something half decent, I'd imagine.
Respectability. That's what we're aiming for.
we'll get the bottom of the barrel stuff out of the way. Everyone thinks that we're a joke, and then we'll be like, yeah, at the end. They know what they're talking about.
So on this show, our target is being able to walk down the street with our heads held high.
To be fair, this is actually a pretty popular series. Monster Musume came out, I believe it was a few years ago now. And, of course, it is one of the factors, or possibly the most important factor, of the whole Monster Girl craze that seems to be going around at the moment.
Yeah, the guy who created the manga pretty much single-handedly created this whole Monster Girl craze.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, in the past, we've always had stuff like cat girls and bunny girls and all of that jazz. But this kind of took things to a whole new level, because if you ever wondered if you could f*** a spider, you can.
That sounds like the best how-to manual to ever read.
So, yeah, Monster Musume is a series about monster girls, and Monster Girls as bits. Do we really need to say much more on that?
No. I think the less you say about it, the better. Leave it to the imagination.
The better.
My advice is leave it to the imagination because God knows the series didn't.
It really didn't. And I must admit, I've went back and read the manga, and the manga's a lot worse than the anime, if that could be possible. But we've had Prison School, we've had Chiminetta on the, we've had Belladonna of Sadness on this show. We're used to this stuff.
No, we're not.
I am.
We had High School DD, and so I can't play H on this show.
Yeah,
we've had worse as well. We had Camphor.
Oh God, you would remind me.
We had My Girlfriend Is a Gal as well. Yeah. We've had all sorts of lowbrow stuff on this, haven't we?
It's not lowbrow, it's nobrow. They don't deserve a brow.
It's shaven eyebrows. That's how bad we're going.
No, there's just that part missing from their face. It's just gone. It's just it just says censored.
Unlike this series, which is not censored. So, there isn't much plot to Monster Museum, eh? We're going to dig out some gold from this series, though, because there is some decent stuff to come out of this. So, in case you didn't know about Monster Musume, it is everyday life with monster girls. For years, the Japanese government had this top secret where mythical creatures such as centaurs, harpies, giant spiders, lamias, mermaids, doppelgangers, I can't remember what the other ones were, slimes. Basically, any kind of monster you would see in a fantasy or an RPG or what have you. But the catch is, they're all girls. Every single one of them.
See, I always wondered, what are the guys?
Well, they all come from like a species cultural act thing. They're all from another world. So I'm assuming the guys just stay at home and watch football or something like that. And they send the girls over to get a good education and work for a living and stuff like that. So yeah, Japan has this whole interspecies cultural exchange act where they bring monsters across to try and live with the humans. On the one kind of thing where they've kind of restricted stuff where they're forbidden from harming each other, which includes having sex. They're forbidden from that, which kind of is opposite to what the entire series kind of puts out after that. So essentially, the basis of the plot is this young lad, Mr. Generic Harem Protagonist. Do we really need to give him his name? Do I really need to attempt to pronounce this guy's name?
Yes. God. Yes.
Oh, it's that time of the year. Kimihito Kurosu.
Sorry, what was that?
Kimihito Kurosu?
What? I
You're doing this on purpose now, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. So yeah, that chap who I can't pronounce. All of a sudden, a FBI agent, a cultural exchange agent, drops this young Lamia on his door by mistake, and he doesn't have the heart to turn her away. So, of course, he adopts her like a young pet and takes her in to his house and looks after her. Yes, it sounds as bad as it does. And
that sounds pretty awful. I'll be honest. And I'm speaking as a person who managed to last an episode of this series.
I watched the whole thing, and the OVAs, and just about everything else. The whole of the first half of the series is him coming across all these other monster girls.
Don't say it like that. Rephrase that.
You know, he is not allowed to do that. It's forbidden. Even though the girls pretty much throw themselves on him, he is not allowed to do that because it is illegal. Which is kind of the way they kind of just tease you through the whole series. It's like, is he going to do it? Is he going to do it? Ah, no, he's not allowed to do that, you see.
See, the thing that puzzles me is, why are they all attracted to him? Is he like some kind of harem version of Achilles? Did his mum dip him in some vat of monster attractor or something like that?
Well, I kind of try to look into it and try to make some plausibility out of this, and I kind of just assume that for a lot of these monsters, you get like the tragic backstories where some of them have been abused and some of them have kind of came across here and they're scared and stuff like that, and he's the one man who has been nice to them in a world that is basically Brexit Britain.
Yeah.
Because this series does have a lot of racism and stuff like that. There are a lot of characters who are kind of just like, yeah, this country's for us. Get out of there, monster girls. Not racist and stuff like that. And
now that you're talking about it, there's a thing that I want to bring up, right? Do you guys remember an older series called Dear S, or Diaz, yeah, as it was called? See, the plot to Monster Musume is pretty much identical to the plot from Dear S.
Yeah, it is. It's,
you just replace aliens with monsters.
Yeah, it is more or less the same. I mean, obviously, this is more of a gag.
Dear S had loads of...
That was pretty...
Yeah, it was a romantic comedy, so...
Yeah.
But when you've been describing it, I was thinking, why does that setup sound familiar? And then it struck me, it's basically that.
Basically. I mean, this is one of those series where you're going to either you're going to love it or you're going to hate it. You're going to decide before you've even seen it whether or not it's going to be something for you. Unlike most harems, most of the characters, except the main one, are actually pretty fun. They do have a lot of fun designs with the girls, and maybe because they're using the whole monsters and stuff like that, they are a lot more memorable than your generic cast of a harem series.
Yeah.
Like I said, there is a lot of like racism. There is a lot of they do a lot of like traditional Japanese stuff. I mean, there's a one point where I think the Lamia ends up getting a job as a shrine maiden because it turns out that they're quite lucky in there for that particular shrine, and it's pretty interesting. They do use a lot of like fantasy elements as well, such as like the mermaid who just wants to have a tragic little mermaid end to her life, so she's trying to like have a tragic love story and all that stuff. There's a spider who kind of is abused by her owners. I don't know. The way they kind of set it up, it's kind of like they're not pets, but they're pets.
Yeah.
She's like abused because they're like, oh, it's a big, giant, massive spider. We can't have that in our rare, tiny little one bedroom apartment. We'll whack you with a newspaper and chase you away and stuff like that. So, but there is a lot of nice little scenes in that series. Like I said, there's a lot of ecchi, there's a lot of awkward moments. It is one of those series what you're expecting from a harem, but I think you could go a lot worse with this series. And in its harem wrapper, in its ecchi wrapper, it does seem to be wanting to tackle some issues that other series maybe don't.
Like bestiality?
Yeah. Pretty much.
Sorry, I had to throw it out there.
So yeah, it's like I said, it's one of those series I think you're going to know before you even look at it. You're going to know whether or not you're going to like it, but I think it's worth giving a chance. You'll either like it or you won't.
Sorry, sorry to kind of sabotage your review there.
Yeah, it's fine. You just said what everyone was thinking.
Well, I don't think everyone was thinking it, but they are now.
It's Monster Musume. It's got its whole... everyone knows what it is.
You were about to say something else inappropriate there, weren't you?
Well, I can't imagine anybody coming onto that series and just being like, oh, I wonder what this could be. Could be an intense political thriller.
See, if Monster Musume. No, seriously, if Monster Musume was an intense political thriller, then I reckon it'd be amazing.
It's just one of those little bits of fun fluff that you watch between a more difficult series.
Yeah. Remember that series, Waiting in Summer, which was based on the manga or the light novel or whatever it is, by the author who did Police Teacher and Police Twins? Waiting in Summer tried to play itself off as some kind of intense political action spy thing, just as a side product from what it was. You're like, really? You're inserting that in here? Let me take away that crowbar of yours.
Well, I mean, like, Monster Musume is one of those series where it's going to go on. I mean, it's selling stupidly well. I mean, as can be expected. I mean, you can get your body pillows, you can get your...
It's a merchandising machine. It's basically that. It's going to have a crap ton of merchandise, and it's all going to sell because people are weird and buy weird things.
If I ever had a pillow, I would get the Lamia, because that pillow is just so funny. No. Or I would get the Girls in Panzer Panzer IV tank pillow, because you've got to have a tank pillow.
If it was a pillow in the shape of a tank, so it was an actual tank pillow that you could climb in and pretend you were actually in a tank, but it was just made of pillow.
It would take up the entire bed.
Wouldn't it be amazing, though?
It would. Why have they not done that instead of doing, you know, the way you can get those little car beds? Why does somebody not just have a tank?
A tank bed.
I'm sure Vladimir Putin had one.
No.
Over to you, boffins.
He just slept on bears.
So we're going to swiftly move away from Monster Museum, eh? And...
to Tucky.
Hello. Away from anime, surprisingly. I'll be back to anime, but away from anime, I've been on Netflix, and Netflix have decided to bring out one of their adult-y cartoon, like, the really, like, over-the-top, it's definitely for adults kind of one. Big Mouth. I don't know if you guys have, like, managed to see it this week. I
haven't, no.
No, unfortunately, Netflix also put up the new Star Trek and a few other things as well, so Big Mouth kind of got pushed aside.
You're missing out.
Has Big Mouth struck again?
Yeah, Big Mouth. I can't quite pin down why they've called it Big Mouth. There are some references during the series into it. I mean, the series is 10 episodes long. It's like similar 24-minute episodes. But it's like some of the humor's basically based around puberty and growing up. And it's set in a school, and there's these two friends, and it's centered around them.
Yeah.
But what makes it great is the hormone monster, and this guy is just like the epitome of depravity. While you go through puberty, all the thoughts that you can have, and it's the embodiment of it. And you get some quite funny moments just from that one character alone. But like I say, they built it around puberty. It's different things, and I don't know. It's kind of like, I can't compare it to anything because there's nothing that's been out that's kind of similar in humor wise.
Okay,
if you know what I mean. I was going to say like kind of like Family Guy, but it's South Park offensive. It's Family Guy kind of rewatchable, but it's a totally different art style. I'm kind of at a loss for like ways to describe it. It's one of them ones where you have to watch it and see it because it is really crude humor. Things from getting your first period, accidentally seeing your mate's cock, talking to a dead jazz ghost in the attic. Am I selling this at all?
No.
Sounds like pretty standard stuff to me. I mean, haven't we all went through that?
Ah, he's all desensitized to it.
we just went from Monster Museum, mate.
Yeah, so basically, it's a bit psychotic.
Kind of a bit. But it's like a fresh take on going through puberty. I mean, luckily I'm like double that age now, so I'm through it.
safely through it. If you were still going through it, I'd be worried.
Yeah, I've got a basketball career if I am. it's one of them ones where adult cartoons. I love adult cartoons, like me American Dads. I mean, even Cleveland Show was funny.
Yeah.
Until they cancelled it for some reason because they like proposed to like, oh, it's just stoners and students who watch it. It's like, no, I'm self-employed and I watch it.
Well, I mean, but Cleveland Show had its moments. I wouldn't say it was funny.
Oh, no, it was. It was really funny. It went for more geek stuff as well. I mean, the Comic-Con episode was really funny.
Yeah. But, I mean, American Dad.
Yeah. That's still going, luckily.
Yeah.
I mean, they're allowed to swear a little bit more in the newer seasons, which I've noticed.
Yeah,
Family Guy's back out. That's on the decline.
Yeah, I think American Dad has basically taken all the best jokes away from South Park, and especially the fact that Stan Smith works for the CIA.
Yeah,
so he's not your average.
You mean taking the jokes away from Family Guy, not South Park?
Yeah, no, taking the jokes away from Family Guy. Yeah, which is why Family Guy is on the decline because. American Dad can just get away with so much more simply because Stan works for the CIA. Yeah.
Well, I mean, have you seen the new episode of Family Guy, which was just out like the weekend gone?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
It's basically them begging for an Emmy and doing a parody of all the Emmy-winning shows.
Oh,
like
God.
Breaking Bad's in there, that My Family one, you know, like lots of like little, like, oh, we want an Emmy. Oh, The Simpsons won it 19 times. Why can't we? And that. And
yeah, but
it's basically Seth MacFarlane. He's pissed off because his big show didn't get an award. He doesn't need an award. It was funny in its own right. Well, people remember Family Guy before most of the shows that win Emmys anyway.
The thing is, Family Guy and The Simpsons, because you mentioned The Simpsons, Family Guy and The Simpsons have basically been scraping the bottom of the barrel for a long time, and they got to the point where that crossover episode.
Yeah.
And they, it was literally, it was utter twaddle in the first place, but then they did the car wash scene.
Yeah.
And you just think.
It was excruciating to watch, like.
Yeah.
It was. So, the whole Bart and Stewie thing.
Yeah.
What the hell's going on there? It's like I say, this new one, Big Mouth, it's one of the influx of like the new ones, and I hope it gets a second season. I mean, surely it'll stop when they've like grown up and whatnot, but it's like the array of characters. I mean, this is the school janitor or coach or whatever the hell he is. He's absolute hilarity. Like I say, the hormone monster is like the main star of it. It's pure depravity. And there's actually like a little like narrative and storyline going through. I mean, one of the friends gets a pillow pregnant. And the pillow has the Ben as well. So it's...
Hang on. Is this a tank pillow?
No. just a regular tank. Not a regular tank pillow. You've got to say a tank pillow now. just a regular pillow. And then he starts on the bath, soggy bath mat. But it's just weird things like that.
See, and that just, yeah, he gets a pillow pregnant, but I mean, that just sounds like, I mean, remember the Rick and Morty episode where Morty persuades Rick to buy him
the sex robot, yeah.
The sex robot, but that ends up with the sex robot having a kid.
Yeah, that's it. It's kind of similar in that way, but Rick and Morty's its own thing.
Yeah.
But it's one of them cartoons that it's getting more offensive as people get more desensitized to things. I remember when The Simpsons thought that, you know, having Patty or Selma as a lesbian was like, ooh, this is shocking. This is the first time America's ever done this. And it's like, nah, we've seen Cartman's ma be Cartman's dar on South Park and whatnot.
Exactly.
You know, the boundaries of adult animation pushed so far, and we're getting the age new wave of like adult comedy, like Borderlands. Border Town, was it?
Border Town was funny.
Yeah, that just took the mick out of immigration and everything like that. I mean, Bud Buchwald is a fantastic character.
Yeah.
As a typical American border agent. And I mean, with Trump and his wall, that is prime for another season.
Yeah.
Primed for it. But like I say, as these new animations come out, they're getting more and more offensive. And the latest one, like I say, Big Mouth, it's pushing it a bit further, but the target isn't just like, you know, social commentary. It's actually like, you know, situations that you would go through in life, like going through puberty. And it's
well,
just,
I don't know. I never got any pillows pregnant.
Well, no, I know that, but you didn't get turned on by The Rock either, which is another thing. Or talk to like a dead jazz pianist in your loft.
No, I did that. As for getting turned on by rocks, it depends.
The Rock.
Yeah. Getting turned on by rocks, I thought you meant, but you said The Rock. No, I wasn't turned on by The Rock. I was turned on by fossils. You know, if you see like a full T-Rex skeleton, like, damn, that's good.
We've already touched on bestiality at the moment. Don't want to go back there. It's.
What was that old joke? I used to be into flagellation, necrophilia, and bestiality, but then I realised I was flogging a dead horse.
I thought you were going to go Blackadder. I'll do anything to anything. Bishop of Bath and Wells, that's it.
Yeah.
I'm a colossal perv. Yeah, I would actually see if that's on YouTube, the Bishop of Bath and Wells. That was just fantastic comedy.
Yeah.
But that's off point again, because it's back in Big Mouth. It's worth a watch, especially if you've got Netflix. There is quite a bit of fourth wall breaking.
Cool.
Which is actually funny. It works. It's not like Deadpool fourth wall breaking, but it's like there's one episode where the coach has intentionally put fecal matter on the basketballs to give people pink eye. Don't know why. He's looking for the eye medication, the place that sells it, and he ends up like breaking through a cinema screen. And at the end of the episode, he breaks through the whole Netflix, you know, when it's like waiting for the next episode menu.
Yeah.
He like breaks through that. He's like, hey, what are you guys doing? Do you know where the Mets is? This isn't the supermarket or whatever. And he's like, you're going to watch some more episodes? And there's other things as well. Like, you know, it's just funny things. Like, see, you have to watch it. I'm terrible at explaining things.
See,
but you definitely have to watch it.
Every time you talk about, you mention the name, all I have is that Smith song in my head, which is called Big Mouth Strikes Again. And so while you're talking, I'm just imagining, you know, are there Roman noses and Walkmans and hairnets in this series? And are they all melting?
I'm not even going to say what I'm thinking.
I think Mark's still fixated on the Lamia girl.
that's basically my kind of like opinion on it. Like I say, I'm terrible at explaining anything about it. It's every gag's visual. Me just talking, just listening to me, audio on it. It's not going to do any good. Watch it. If you're easily offended, watch it even more. It's a fantastic show in 10 episodes. You'll get through that in a night like I did.
Excellent. Right. For me then, we'll run through this quick because we have mentioned Ushio and Tora a lot, especially when it was
quite
broadcasting.
A lot.
And
I seem to think that I reviewed it like about a year ago when it was on Crunchyroll.
Yeah, I think you did the first season.
2 years ago.
Animatsu are releasing Ushio and Tora on Blu-ray, and it's both series, so seasons 1 and 2, which was only 12 episodes long. So it's a great thing that they're actually combining everything into one release. And that's coming out on October the 9th. And I've got to say, for those of you who have been living under a rock for a while, Ushio and Tora is an old manga from 1990 to 1996 by Kazuhiro Fujita, who is a brilliant mangaka, really does supernatural and horror very, very well. And if you're a fan of Ushio and Tora, you should really check out one of his other manga from 97 to 2006 called Karakuri Circus. It's amazing. All about robot clowns who are trying to kill everybody in the world.
Clowns are hot right now.
Using this circus that just appears at random all over the world.
Oh.
Yeah, it's that good. It's really good. And he's got a very twisted art style. It's very distinctive. But Ushio and Tora is the story of a young boy who is told by his dad. He lives in this temple and he's told by his dad to clean out one of the rooms in the temple, and he finds a basement, and in the basement he finds a creature impaled against a wall with a spear through the creature. And the creature says to him, if you pull out the spear, I won't kill you. And so Ushio, he's a bit slow, but he's not dumb. So he's like, nah, I'm not going to. But then the temple is attacked by monsters, and so he has to pull the spear out and various things like that. That marks the adventures of Ushio and Tora beginning. The monster in the basement is Tora, who becomes a very good friend. Kind of like would you say Tora is more like kind of an older brother type character to Ushio by the end of it?
Well, kind of. And I mean, without going into spoiler territory, it's like how the relationship between the two develops and you find out like his origin.
Yeah.
It's kind of like because they're both kind of like in the same situation.
Yeah. They are. I mean, there's certain things that aren't spoilers and certain things that are. There is a big bad in this, and the big bad is basically a creature called Hakumen no Mono. But one of the things that you'll find in the series is that Hakumen no Mono is basically responsible for pretty much everything that happens. But when you get to the very end of the series, you find that Hakumen no Mono actually didn't start out, like many other things, didn't start out particularly bad. You know, and this is the thing, this is one of the genius things about Ushio and Tora. Now, I will agree with people that the second series was a bit rushed. The first series was magnificent. Would you agree, Tucky?
Yeah, I would. I'm in agreement there. It's one of them things, because it did become so popular, and they just kind of hashed it quickly because the demand was there.
Yeah.
And it's one of the pratfalls of all anime that make it like big or have a great reception. Is that they think, oh, great, merchandise it, let's get it out, let's bang it out, doesn't matter, take the shortcuts, we don't care, we want this out there, the fans demand it. And sometimes it should be a case of, well, just let the fans wait. Don't sacrifice the quality for the quantity, just take your time with it, keep on the right tracks, and just release it in your own time. Don't give in to the commercialization of it, because at the end, the product suffers.
All I can say is, take a leaf out of Ufotable's book and Fate Zero. They basically had Fate Zero. The first season was out, and people were just raving about the first series. Not so much the first episode, but the first series in general. People were going, oh, this is amazing. This is great. It's so intelligent. It's so thoughtful. It's so brutal and violent. It's everything. It's got everything, everything, everything that we need. When's the second season? And Ufotable said, it's going to be out on this date. But then they said, no, we're actually not releasing it on that date because we're not happy with the product. So we're going back and we're making some big changes and it'll be out on this date instead, several months later.
And it works.
Yeah. And the thing is, the Fate franchise now is bigger than it's ever been. And it is purely because of Fate Zero, when you get right down to it. I mean, imagine if Fate Zero had never come out. Would we have Fate Grand Order or Fate Apocrypha or the PS4 game or anything like that?
No, I don't think so.
That's the thing. If you take your time with it, it could be really great. And it could be even more marketable because it's such a high-quality product.
Yeah. I mean, before Fate Zero, we had one Fate movie, which was Unlimited Blade Works, and that wasn't very good. But then Ufotable went back and redid Unlimited Blade Works as a series. It was bloody amazing.
They turned it around.
Yeah.
I mean, the best example we can give is Attack on Titan.
Yeah.
With what they did with the whole getting it out there immediately. And when it came to season two, I don't think the hype was there anymore. The manga itself kind of like died off a bit. As soon as you get into the whole like backstory of where Titans come from, like the whole outside of the walls war, it just becomes dull. Because the whole idea of like, oh, there's Titans attacking, there's no reason, but they're all trapped like rats. Let's see them act like trapped rats. But as soon as they get out of the trap, it's like, oh well.
Yeah.
You know, we don't really care about that. But it became so big and they were like, oh, let's stick merchandise and then Attack on Titan, razor blades, we want everything. And all that hype and that, and now fans are put off it. And you go like, oh, did you see Attack on Titan season two? And people will be like, meh.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not an important thing. Usher and Tora, the problem with Usher and Tora, first series, as I said, was magnificent. And what I love about the series is that it doesn't really hold back on the brutality. I mean, Usher and Tora is one of the series that inspired Tite Kubo, or Tite Kubo, to give him the correct pronunciation. It influenced him when it came to the creation of the Zanpakuto in Bleach, stuff like that. It influenced certain aspects of Naruto, stuff like that. Because the Beast Spear is a brutal weapon when you get right down to it, isn't it?
Oh, the whole essence from its creation right the way through the history of it, every single bit of that thing. It's one of the things when they say you put your heart and soul into the forging of a weapon, then they literally do and they spare no detail.
Yeah.
With how it's made. And it's really dark.
Yeah, it's very, very dark. And the thing is, it touches on various aspects. It has a certain folkloric element to it as well, which I absolutely adore, especially the bit where they have to comb Ushio's hair.
Yeah.
You know, and that's something that, have you ever seen that in an anime or a manga before?
None pops to mind.
Do you see what I mean?
And that way it's unique. It doesn't follow the tropes. It just goes with its own direction.
Yeah.
And like you say, that was, I mean, they managed to build a whole history around it. Like through the first season and the second season, and it all leads to like the final battle.
Yeah. And
but it's the journey there, the whole story of finding out, like, you know, I mean, even he goes back in time, like, and actually sees the story in the first person as well. And he's part of it.
Yeah. But I mean, that whole journey of finding out just what the hell is going on, because Ushio doesn't know. And, you know, taking that journey with him, you have to feel sorry for a lot of the characters.
There's a lot of sorrow in it, and it hits you on a personal level. And yeah. I love anime as that can get you to do that.
Yeah, I mean, Made in Abyss is one of the more recent ones that really gets you right in the feelings.
Oh my God, it does. It's like a power cannon blast right to the middy.
Yeah. The thing is, Ushio and Tora, when it first came, you know, the first adaptation of Ushio and Tora was only like 10 episodes long, and you couldn't fit a 33-volume manga into 10 episodes. It was like a 10-episode OVA thing. It wasn't very good. And so I'm really happy that they did a remake. Yeah, the second season wasn't as good as the first season. It was a bit too rushed, but still, I'm still happy that it got made in the first place. I found it hilarious when you had people going, the art style looks very old school. I think it's trying a bit too hard. You're like, what? What did you say? You feel it's trying a bit too hard because it's trying to be old school. If either he wants to respond to that, then feel free.
It's just people like to hear it. It's like, oh no, you're trying too hard to be retro. It's like it was made before retro was even a thing.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about a story that influenced Naruto, Bleach, and various other famous titles like that. So yeah, it has a right. If the art style is a bit retro, that's because it is.
I'd rather they attempt to at least go off the art style rather than try and make things look all modern and just lose a lot of the charm of what the series had as well.
Yeah. I mean, the series, it wasn't afraid to be brutal. I mean, okay, certain characters were too important for it to lose them, but other characters... I mean, it's rare in anime when you kill off major characters, isn't it?
You don't get many series that goes full Game of Thrones on them.
Yeah. There's hardly any that go full Game of Thrones on them. There's hardly any that will just get rid of this character who's been there for ages.
So, thing, you know, that's what we need. We need an anime with a really good plot narrative. So even if the main character or the main focus is killed off, you've got enough supporting character and someone who can step up to become the main character.
Yeah, which is one of the reasons.
See if that ever happens.
Well, the thing is, it's one of the reasons why I absolutely adore Bakaro. Because it had so many main characters. And this is the thing, people go, no, this character was obviously the main character. No, Bakano had about 13 different main characters.
They were all their own main characters in their part of the life.
They all had a gun in their heart. I love Isaac and Miria.
I really need to rewatch that series, it's so good.
Do you think that Isaac and Miria should have their own little 5-minute episode short series? Of just the adventures of Isaac and Miria, and just 5 minutes of them doing something.
I think for five minutes or so, I think it would work. I think their real charm comes because everything else is kind of serious, and they're like the whole, I wouldn't say the outcasts, but they're in their own little world
They're the comic relief, and I love the fact that they're completely clueless as well.
Exactly.
Stealing gold from Mother Earth.
Oh.
Anyway, Ushio and Tora, it's out on Blu-ray, and it looks fantastic on Blu-ray. The animation is superb, pretty much all the way through. Yes, the second series is rushed, but that's in terms of the story. The characters are brilliant, the story is brilliant. If you've never watched it, you owe it to yourself to watch it, especially if you like action and supernatural and dark fantasy stuff with lots of folklore thrown in there.
Are there any extras on, or...?
The extras are what we expect. Clean opening, clean clothes, a bunch of TV spots and trailers from Japan, and other things from Sentai Filmworks, like Gate and Otowara Rubano, False Faces, I think it was, and various things like that. So, yeah. Oh, also, the English dub is not bad. The English dub is actually okay. I still prefer the Japanese dub, but that's just a choice thing. You can get away with watching the English dub. They've tried to make the characters and the voices work. It just doesn't seem right to me, you know?
Yeah.
It's not so much their intonation or the pronunciation or anything like that. It just doesn't work for me. It's just a personal choice. But the English dub is actually pretty good.
Oh, well, cool. That's as much as a compliment they're going to get.
Off me, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the most...
Highest of praise.
Well, no, because I've said, I mean, The Boy and the Beast that we talked about last week, the English, the dub for that is amazing. And there are amazing dubs out there. There are dubs out there where I will happily sit down and watch the English version because it is just as good as the Japanese version, if not better, because sometimes it is better. I mean, Cowboy Bebop, for example. Would you sit down and watch Cowboy Bebop in Japanese or English?
English.
Most people would say English. I know loads of diehard sub fans, and they will say English for Cowboy Bebop straight away. So yeah, anyway, leaving that to one side, the new season has started, and we've got some first impressions to go through.
Is it winter 2018, or do we classify this as fall?
Fall. It's fall. It's autumn. We're only in October.
I said seeing Christmas stuff in the supermarkets, and me all... perception of seasons have gone out of whack already.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, no, because we haven't had Halloween yet, but then again, they do put Christmas...
It's October's fuzzy for me.
They're going to eventually.
Go ahead.
Eventually, Coca-Cola is going to merge the two holidays into a 3 month long holiday called Halloween Mass.
Oh, they've got to bring a monster truck Coca-Cola thing.
Yeah.
Like Nightmare Before Christmas kind of thing.
Yep.
What's this? What's this? There's something in the air. Ah. I'm not a fan of Nightmare Before Christmas because it's every like soft goth girl's style, and it's like, oh, why bother?
See, they all like a Nightmare Before Christmas, but if you set them, well, what about the Corpse Bride? They'll go, what? You go, the Corpse Bride? What?
Yeah.
I don't know this film. Yeah. Did you dream it? Did you make it up? No, it's an actual film.
Now with skeletons leading Christmas, what's going on? Yes. No, you know, it used to be about Samhain. It used to be a pagan thing. And, you know, we used to use turnips instead of pumpkins, but everyone went American and went, oh, we got our pumpkins.
There's the other one as well. Oh, I watched an amazing vampire comedy the other day. It was called Dark Shadows. Is that the one with Johnny Depp? Yes, it was so funny. No, that's not the vampire comedy you want to watch. You want to watch What We Do in the Shadows.
Dracula Dead and Loving It.
Dracula Dead and Loving It, and What We Do in the Shadows. If you've not seen it, watch it. It's hilarious.
It is a lot of fun.
It's basically a mockumentary about vampires.
It's on Netflix. Give it a watch.
Yeah.
I'll put that on my list.
See, Mark Kermode once said, if you mention the word mockumentary, the first question you've got to ask is it as good as Spinal Tap? And he reckons that that's like the pinnacle of mockumentary. And I disagree with him. I would say that it depends on what the subject matter is. What We Do in the Shadows is completely different in terms of its approach to Spinal Tap. But it's so fun. I'd say they're about equal in terms of how good they are, though. But that's not what we were talking about. Later. We were talking about the new anime season. You got to stop me doing this.
Yes. Autumn 2017.
Okay, so, Mark, you haven't said anything for a while, so why don't you start?
Yeah, about this season. For me, this season is season three of a lot of seasons I haven't caught up with. We've got Love Live season two.
Yeah.
Or Love Live Sunshine season two. We've got Osomatsu season two. We've got Food Wars season three, or Food Wars Plate three, or whatever they're calling it.
That's got one episode out, which I've watched, which, if you read the manga, it's picking up from the school festival arc.
Yeah.
So it hasn't gone quite into dark territory yet, but it's going to get darker.
I wouldn't say it's dark.
Well, no, it is. The mental abuse of Erina, like from her father. Like, proper mental abuse.
Yeah, that's dark, but the rest of it isn't.
Well, no, the rest of it's just like, oh, well, I'm going to cook some food. It's going to look tasty as hell. You're going to be hungry, you fat turd. And that's basically what it is for me.
No. That was Restaurant to Another World for all of us.
This food's going to turn you on. You're going to feel weird, but it's going to happen, and you can't do anything about it.
Sausage roll, anyone?
The one thing I've noticed about Food Wars, especially in season three, is that they have kind of lost that whole food porn gimmick, or it's kind of very quickly being pushed aside to just being, ooh, this is food porn.
No. You've only had one episode. You can't make that judgment after one episode.
Well, no, I mean, season two, they did lay off the whole exploding clothes and...
Give it time.
It is still present in the manga, and I dare say it will be, but it's in less supply as they've actually done the right thing and focused more on the plot, which they could have done from the off, but they catch people's attention with exploding claws.
Yeah.
So,
anything else from you, Mark?
Umaru-chan season two is a thing.
Yes.
We're going to discover if that annoying little child needs to be throttled or not, I suppose. Ancient Magus Bride, or is it
Ancient Magus Bride? I've been waiting for that one for a while. Obviously, I mentioned it before. I've been waiting for it for a while. I'm so looking forward to watching that.
It's getting a bit of attention. I mean, the first episode isn't out yet, but it's definitely being plugged as one of the main ones by Crunchyroll. So expect to see a lot more about it.
Oh yeah, I knew it was going to be one of the big players of this year. It is very, very good, by the way. In terms of its story, it is very, very good. So I hope that they do it justice. I hope that they treat it the same way they treated Maiden Abyss, rather than the way they treated Knights and Magic and Gate and Arch Enemy and Hero and so many others.
That's a weird one because Crunchyroll has it. And it was Amazon who had Aiden Abyss under people's radars because nobody really has Amazon. And all of a sudden, like, whispers were in the community of, like, oh, Maiden Abyss, Maiden Abyss. And that's what got me, people, like, talking about it. But it's like, well, it's not one of the, like, streaming services I have. Yeah. So I'm going to go out my way and watch it on Amazon. And it became, for me, the best anime of last season.
It's arguably the best of the year so far.
Arguably, yeah. I mean, we could be surprised in the next season, but at the moment, it's not looking like it.
Exactly. I mean, this is one of the reasons why I said it's frustrating when a series in the middle of the year or at the beginning of the year sets such a high benchmark that everything
Which is kind of ironic because it's about going into a pit.
Yeah, I know. One of the ones that's caught my attention, Tucky, and you'll like this one. Mm-hmm. And the thing that I find hilarious is that there's like one episode out and it's already getting people rating it. It's called Osaki wa Fufu ni Nate Kara, or Love is Like a Cocktail.
Oh, yeah.
It's only a 3-minute short, though.
Hey?
Isn't it?
No. It's a series.
It's only a 3-minute short.
Yeah, the 3-minute shorts.
Yeah, and I've actually got that on my list here because I watched it. And I was expecting it to be like a full 20-minute episode.
Nah.
It's like, no, it's a three-minute thing. It's basically an alcoholic woman who acts cute when she binge drinks.
Yep. But the thing is,
I'm assuming they're going to do it like 3-minute episodes of Restaurant to Another World, but instead of like delicious food and like actually character, it's like, no, this cute girl drinking a different drink every 3-minute shot.
Yeah. And the thing is, they do go into a bit of detail about the drinks. So,
yeah. But so it's just like one of them, try this cocktail. Look, she looks cute when drinking it. Try it.
Yeah. It's not the only short series that I've got on my list. Another one is Girl's Last Tour, which Kino's Journey has started again, right? There's a new Kino's Journey series, and I am so down with that. I've watched the first episode already, which was... It's basically recaptured, you know, that road trip vibe with the philosophy and the, you know, the thoughtfulness of the original series and the movies.
Yeah, and I've picked it up... Actually, just a few minutes ago, watching it before my washing machine broke, but it's basically the lad and his motorcycle.
No. Kino's not a lad. Kino's a girl.
Is it?
Yeah, Kino's female.
Nobody's ever corrected us. Well, there we go. That changes quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, the thing is, but Kino is a girl, and Hermes, her motorcycle, talks. It's a sentient motorcycle.
There's the Stranger Things I've talked in anime. But,
yeah, I know.
This latest one, I mean, the new episode, they go to Jungle's Rule, which is a city where killing is legal.
Well, I think you have to word it properly. They say killing is prohibited. No, sorry, not killing. Murder isn't prohibited, right?
Yeah.
And the key is in the phrasing. I'm not going to say what happens, but the key is in that phrasing. So think about those words. Murder is not prohibited.
And also they do an amazing stack of pancakes as a local delicacy.
Yeah. But Girl's Last Tour is a bit like Kino's Journey, in a sense. The idea is that civilization is dead, but you've got these two girls, Cheetah and Yuri, who are still alive, and they hop aboard their beloved Kettenkrad motorbike and aimlessly wander the ruins of the world that they once knew. They're basically looking for the next meal, for fuel for the ride. And it's a fairly bleak existence, but the two of them are together, and as long as they're together, there's a little bit of hope.
Basically like living in Sunderland, isn't it?
Yeah, and the thing is, the character designs are a bit like Maiden Abyss, and the episodes are only like, I think they're about 6-7 minutes long.
Yep. I've got another short one. There's lots of short animes all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Which is strange. It's called Rainy Cocoa, or Cocoa.
Huh?
Rainy Cocoa. It's set in Hawaii. It's basically Japanese bloke opens a coffee shop in Hawaii, finds it tough, and at the end of the first minute, we find out he's going to get a dog. Episode's like 2 minutes long. I don't know how better to put it, but, you know, somebody's paid an amount and said, you know what, this will make a good 2-minute episode.
Well, I saw the poster for that one. I haven't watched it, and it looks a very Fujoshi-centered series.
It's just weebs in Hawaii to me. That's all it is as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
Another one which hasn't got an episode out yet, but I'm looking forward to is the Boku no Kanojo ga Maji Mesu Giyu Shoujo Bitch Naken. Try saying that drunk. It's the bitch one.
Is that my girlfriend is a bitch?
Yeah, it's somewhere along that line. It's Boku no, so you know it's going to be fun. I'm eagerly awaiting the first episode of that one. Another one which I've watched, one to avoid, Urahara. It is...
Urahara?
It's like if Harajuku had an abortion and made it into an anime. And it's basically where kawaii aliens invade Earth, stealing up all the famous landmarks because they crave culture.
Ah, right, and that only, one. Yeah.
And only three cute girls who work in a Harajuku store can save us with all the help from an American girl who was abducted and dropped in Japan and her talking fried shrimp thing.
Yeah. Moving away from that swiftly.
As fast as you can, please, because it's...
One that I have been waiting for a while, since I first saw the trailer. I went, Ken the Eagle! Infinity Force.
And then we've been waiting a while for that one as well.
Yeah, I watched the first episode, and the first episode is Fruit Loops, but Fruit Loops in a good way. The character designs are great. The animation is, it's CG, so it can be a little bit stiff in places because it's CG, you know. And
oh
it's,
my.
It's CG not done by Pixar. It's CG done by Tatsunoko. So it can be a little bit stiff. But you have on display Hurricane Polymar and Tekkaman Blade and Ken the Eagle and Kashin. And it's like all of these, you know.
This is Rob Shawnee's age again. Because most listeners will never have heard of these characters.
No, it's basically Ken the Eagle is from Battle of the Planets. And, well, if you've played Tatsunoko versus Capcom, you'll recognize the names.
Yeah, I recognize the names. I played that a few times.
And Kashin had Kashin Sins out only a few years ago.
Yeah.
And if you've not seen Kashin Sins, then you've really missed out because it's an amazing series. Yes, it's slow, which is the main criticism that people gave to it, but I would say Kashin Sins is one of those anime where it leans more towards culture rather than pop culture. So have that. Anyway, Infinity Force, it looks like a lot of fun. I've watched the first episode. It's gearing up to be a lot of fun. And it's all of them fighting over this girl and her giant magic pencil.
Oh my.
Well, it's not a euphemism, but it does sound like that. But the thing is, that's why I said the story is Fruit Loops.
Oh, well, sounds like a lot of fun.
And I don't just mean any Fruit Loops, because Kellogg's have released this unicorn Fruit Loops.
Oh, yeah. Our party unicorn's been advertising them.
So, yeah, another one that isn't out, that hasn't been released yet, but Chucky and I have been waiting for this, Inuyashiki.
Yes, my God. Old Man Mech.
Yeah, Old Man Astro Boy. We've been waiting for that for a while, and the artwork, everything like that, it looks very good, doesn't it?
Ooh.
The trailer's already out.
Yeah.
I believe it's going on Amazon.
Yep.
Yeah, again, Amazon getting ahead of the game there.
Yeah.
Suck at Crunchyroll. But it's one of the ones, I mean, I've went into great detail. It was me pick of the geek. If you go onto the Crunchyroll manga service, they've got that on for free so you can read every chapter.
Yep.
It's definitely worth the watch. It's dark, it's social commentary, it touches on, it's kind of, even though it's like a sci-fi kind of feel to it, it's real life. Yeah. And it's like the mix, both mixed together so well. And like I say, you've got to watch it when it comes out.
Yeah, I agree.
Couldn't recommend it highly enough.
Yeah. One that was pretty easy to call when the manga was first released, because you knew as soon as you saw the manga, you just went, so that's going to get an anime. Easy.
Yeah.
Black Clover.
I've watched the first episode, and I have to say, it's kind of annoying.
Yep.
And, I mean, basically, the plot is, it's like two brothers, if I can say brothers. Well, I'm not sure if they're related or not.
They're really close friends. They were both raised in the same orphanage.
Yeah, by a priest, and one's like calm and cool, and the other, and they become rivals and whatnot, and it's basically Blue Exorcist.
It's basically Naruto.
It's basically both of those things and more. I mean, don't forget, there's lots of elements of fairy tale in this.
The books and whatnot, and...
Just the main
One starts with no power, the other one's got all the power.
The main character's never-give-up attitude and face everything head-on and just attack from the front and ignore any tactics or anything like that. I wonder which character...
The thing is, his voice, he's over-the-top shouting at everything. I'm going to do all these sit-ups. I might not have magic, but I can do physical tasks like shouting It got annoying after the first 10 minutes.
Yep.
And come the end of it, it's like, oh, man, will you just shut the F up?
Believe it.
And it is. It's like the really weeby hyper side of Naruto before he became Boruto's dad.
The way they're doing this series is that they actually are actively trying to make this into the next Naruto.
Yeah, I know.
It's got a lot of hype. Crunchyroll's got their little, you're in my highlighted section, so you're going to be watched a lot.
Yeah. Tucky, you got another
one? There's no way. I've got loads. Another one that's kind of meh. It's Suki Pro, the animation.
Oh, God.
Basically, bunch of boy bands preparing for the big show at Japanese's largest like music venue with such bands as Solid S, Growth, Quell, and other bishy bands that I can't be asked to recall.
Yeah.
It's just them preparing for a concert. A couple of hot, attractive guys who can sing, preparing to do their job.
There's an interesting one that got my attention about 12 warriors who are burdened with names of the 12 Chinese Zodiac members, and they have to fight each other with lives on the line and pride at stake, all to grant just one wish. And that's called Junie Tyson or Zodiac War.
Oh, yeah.
And the first episode of that, I've got to say, very well animated. The action is very, very good. It's very dark, and it's actually kind of brutal in places. This is the first episode, so there's not really much to spoil on the first episode. You basically get to see the character who's basically walking with these giant guns. And I'm not talking about her guns. I'm talking about the gun she's carrying.
Oh, my.
You'll understand when you watch it. And thing is, she's reminiscing about her training and stuff like that, but also how the fact that she basically, because her sister was better than her, but she purposefully, because her sister loved us and believed everything she said, and they were raised in like this family of warriors and assassins and stuff like that. So she distorted her sister's mind, turned her into a serial killer, and then caused her to kill herself.
Okay. Yeah.
And this is all in the first episode. Like, yes, this looks interesting now.
I've got two more which I've watched.
Oh.
I've left the best to last. I'm leaving the very best to last.
Okay.
First off, there's Recovery of an MMO Junkie.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that was a lot of fun.
It's just fun. You see a female who plays an MMO as a hot guy, and there's some kind of like narrative, like people in a guild or something. I mean, they haven't went into much detail in the first episode, just that her male character online has a female friend who we suspect, or it's pretty much certain that the female character is actually going to be a guy in real life.
Yeah.
It's just playing an MMO and being human. Yeah. You know, being innate, locked in your room, playing an MMO 24/7.
Yeah.
And the last one, and this is my contender for anime of the season, it's King's Game.
Oh, yeah. I looked at that and I thought, another death game in high school, really?
Oh, no, this is, I mean, the anime picks up from the second arc in the manga.
Yeah.
And basically in the manga, they go through it is a death game in a high school. Yeah, it's Battle Royale, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
You know, the usual. But this one catches my attention because chainmail on a smartphone and the whole class is involved. You don't know how, but there's like a supernatural force of sorts that's playing this game.
Yeah.
And in the manga, he goes through this like trauma and the guy's like the last one living. And then, even though he's like won the first King's Game, he moves to a new school and it starts all over again. And for some reason, rather than going through the first like arc in it, the anime has decided to start like with him joining the new school.
Okay.
So if you haven't read the manga and you're joining it from the anime perspective, they've actually managed to pretty much give you the highlights of like the first game, which you came out of as the only survivor. And it picks up the drama and the action of the second game actually starting to kick off. So I've got a feeling it's going to be a fantastic ride. It's great. I don't know why more anime so does. It's great to see an actual genuine horror like anime in October. Cause it's like with it being Halloween, you never really see any like proper full on horrors.
This is true.
And with King's Game. It's something, I can tell you something, King's Game, they could make this into a live action movie and they probably already have.
Yeah.
Because it is one of them ones that does translate well. It's got elements of Danganronpa in there as well. And like you say, Battle Royale, you know, all the usual survival games, but it doesn't feel like the rest of those. It feels like it stands out on its own. And that's that, like say, first episode has me absolutely hooked.
Okay.
And it's brutal from the off as well.
Okay.
Which is absolutely fantastic.
I might have to check that out then. You've convinced me to at least give it a try. Because as soon as I saw Death Game in a high school, I just thought, I'm out.
No. Give it a shot. Like I say, don't go into much detail. And if you can, get time, read the manga for the first arc. Because they'll probably be referencing a lot. And with it being 20 minutes, they can't really flash back to everything that happened in the previous game.
Yeah.
Just do a good job of it so far. But this is only the first episode. I'm sure there'll be a lot of context that's going to go missing.
Yeah. Yeah. One that, I've got like two left, and I'm saving the one that made me angry the most to last.
I've got two left as well.
Okay. Do you want to alternate then? Do you want to go first?
Mine are both quite short. And okay. They're both actually carryovers from last year. Oh. March comes in like a Lion season 2.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Which was one of the highlights from last year.
It's a sleeper. It got everyone off guard.
It really went under the radar. And the other one, which also went through under the radar in the same season, was Classicaloid. And that's getting season 2.
Yeah, that one is another one that caught people off guard.
I really enjoyed that. It was daft fun.
I'm not as much of a fan of Classicaloid as you, Mark, but I wouldn't say it was bad. I'd say it's just not my cup of tea. Rather than
it was just one of those ones,
bad.
I think, because they had that much on and there was that much getting pushed. Obviously, this was the season that had Yuri on Ice and Keijo and a few others that were getting really heavily pushed. It was just a nice little change of pace, really.
Yeah, because in any other season, something like March Comes Like a Lion would have been one of the main dramas of that season.
Yeah.
But yeah, for my last two, the first one is Garo Vanishing Lion, which is... based on the whole Garo Tokusatsu series, anytime they put out something that has Garo in, I'm automatically thinking, right, I'm going to give that a try, because Garo has been around for a long time and it's had some good ones. They had Garo the Animation in 2014, which was pretty decent, actually. But then the 2015 effort, Garo Crimson Moon, wasn't that great. So it has its ups and downs like any other franchise. And they're not all connected, these series. They all kind of jump around through time. They're all kind of alternative reality type things or different points in time. This one starts in a prosperous city called Russell City and an omen that threatens to shake the world. In a prosperous city named Russell City, an omen that threatens to shake its world begins to move within it. A man named Sword is the first to hear the first stirrings of the plot and throws himself into a shadow war in order to expose it.
Mm.
I couldn't resist putting on a weird voice for that. His only clue is the keyword Eldorado. In a world. So, yeah. Generally, Garo is kind of fun to watch anyway. And this one, it looks the business. I've seen the trailer for it. And it looks like it's got the animation quality. It looks like it's got some great character designs and some fantastic action. So I'm looking forward to it. And now for the one that made me angry. Angrier than I have ever been for a long time with anime.
Oh, here we go.
Okay.
Here we go.
Now, I reviewed several volumes of the manga series of this on 4Panel a while ago, right? And I said the same thing then as I will say now. Why the hell didn't you remake the original before you did this? This is UQ Holder. It's a series by Ken Akamatsu. They're marketing it. They're pitching it as Maho Sensei Nagima 2, right? Now, they did two versions of Nagima. The first one was all right. Ended in a weird way. It was kind of Fruit Loops in places, but it was all right. The second one started off as a battle anime, you know, the intro theme, everything like that. It all kind of hinted at it being a battle anime, but it turned out not to be the case. And so we were cheated again, because Nagima at that point was still kind of, oh, look, It's a 10-year-old boy teaching high school girls at Mahora Academy. It's a harem. Oh, look, it's a harem. It's a shorter harem. But then about...
So this UQU holder, it's like the world came to know the existence of magic, but the lad who's like the main character, he's lived in a rural town.
Nope.
So he doesn't know much about the changes.
Well, not quite. Not quite. See, here's the thing, right? About halfway through Negima, it suddenly turned into a brilliant manga series. And I mean brilliant. Ken Akamatsu had built it up to a point where he could pretty much do what he wanted. And when you let him do what he wants and doesn't have to bow to fan service pressures, he can do some amazing stuff, right? And so you had this ongoing story with Negima and his companions trying to stop the destruction of effectively two worlds, you know, the magic world and Earth. And they don't realize where the magic world is actually located. So basically there's a lot of subtext. There's a lot of plot development. There's a lot of character development and there's a lot of story development in Negima from, the Mahora battle tournament onwards, which is about half of the entire manga series. But instead of, say, even just starting from the battle tournament and doing the rest of the series, they thought, UQ holder, that's in the public eye right now, because UQ means forever. The Japanese have a word for forever, meaning UQ, which is why it's called UQ holder, forever holder, basically somebody who's immortal. And the main character is Tota Konoe, who is supposed to be the grandson of Negi Springfield. So he does know all about what's happened with the world. Yes, he's been in a rural town, but you know, Negi Springfield's supposed to be his granddad. But what's made me angry about this is the fact that UQ Holder is getting an anime series before we have any remake of Negima. And if you wanted to really push this, you should have done a remake of Negima first to build up the hype, get all the old Negima fans back, you know, get them hyped up for it, and then do UQ Holder, because then you'll make a killing.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, as somebody who didn't start off as a Negima fan, but really likes the second half of the manga series and wishes somebody would actually animate the second half of the manga series, just like so many other fans, I would love to see that. I would love to for Negima to get the Hunter x Hunter treatment. So, you know, well done, JC staff and Ken Akamatsu and whoever else makes the decisions for pissing me off one more time with regards to Negima. Good job.
You don't know, they might be listening.
I hope they are.
You might get something done.
I hope they do. I hope they are, and I hope they do. I'm not saying that UQ Holder is a bad series. It's just, there's a lot of references in the manga that you won't get unless you've read the Negima manga. And if UQ Holder is being done based on the manga, you're going to get a bunch of puzzled people going, what is this shit? I don't know what the hell is going on. What is he talking about? When he's talking about the Life Maker, who the hell is the Life Maker?
Cousin of the Candyman.
Do you see what I mean? You know, there's a lot of references to the original Negima series in UQ Holder, in the manga, which are going to be translated into the anime, and people are going to be sitting there going, I don't know what's going on. And now you know why I'm angry about it. Well, it's a fair reason.
Is it out now? Is it on Crunchyroll or what have you?
I don't know if it's out. I think the first episode might be out.
I think it's on Amazon.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's on Amazon or something like that. The first episode came out on October the 2nd, and it's on Amazon, yeah.
Amazon US, anyway.
Yeah, so we'll see. If I get a chance to watch it, I will watch it. I will make a judgment after I've watched it. But for now, knowing what I do about the manga and about how they do adaptations and what I know about the Negima manga, I can say, in all honesty, if they basically do a straight adaptation of the manga, in fact, there's key elements of the story in the manga that will probably make it into the anime that people are not going to understand unless they've read the Negima manga.
Well, I haven't read any of the Negima stuff, so I'm going to give it a try.
I read it.
See how confused I am at the end.
I read it, probably about 10 years ago. I got the first 20 volumes, and I think after volume 10, I think I'll just give up with it.
Yeah, after volume 10. The thing is, it's that first half of the Negima series. That first half is just basically... Yeah, but after the battle event at the school festival at Mahara Academy, after that is when it gets really good.
Mm.
It's just you have to wade through a lot of crap to get to that point. So, yeah, UQ Holder. They probably will add a bit more exposition into the anime adaptation than they... just to make it more accessible to people, but we'll see. Let us know your judgment on it, Tucky, when you get to watch it.
I will. But I'm good with things like that.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the end of the show. We've talked about all sorts of things, but we're going to leave you there. Keyframe is part of the Geek Show Podcast Network, and all of our shows are available on Audioboom, iTunes, and various other podcast providers. Basically, subscribe to one of them, and you'll keep up to date with all of our shows. We are on Patreon, so if you are a regular listener, then please show your support. We could do with all of the help we can get. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, or just email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. And that's about it for the info dump, so we're going to leave you now. I've been Rob.
I've been Mark.
I've been Tucky.
We'll see you all later.
Goodbye.
Toodle pip. Got to watch the last of My Hero Academia now. See if all my gets what's coming to them.